I can barely hear you.
Conditioned realities. Asankata means unconditioned realities. So, and also under the conditioned realities, we discuss some few characteristics like a Paramattha Dhamma is a nature or an entity that arises together with some other similar natures. It means natures. They have their intrinsic nature, that is the first quality, they have their intrinsic nature, and they arise with some other natures which have other intrinsic natures. So for instance, when hardness arises, it doesn't arise alone. It arises together with cohesion and heat and also the pushing nature. So likewise, a reality, a conditioned reality is never alone in its existence. Same thing happens with the mentalities, materialities, all the conditioned realities. Then you also mentioned when a certain reality possesses two certain realities possess similar characteristics. like hardness in one material cluster and also hardness in another material cluster. Though they can be categorized under the same ultimate group, but they have their own arising, different arising, maybe in a different location or maybe in a different time. So when some reality can also be distinguished, mainly it is distinguished from others in terms of its intrinsic nature, and also it can be distinguished by its own arising. And also we briefly explained that of a mental or a physical cluster, we call Chittupada or Rupakalapa. The group of realities have the same arising. They have the same arising. You change the mic up. Is it clear, Dr. Ryan? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's kind of the same, but it's okay, Dr. Ryan.
Right. So, it has its own intrinsic nature and also its own arising. Then, we also said that Paramatta Dhammas are empirically observable in both in five sense rules and also in the mind rule. And also, finally, we discussed that they are the realities in our intellectual analysis. They are irreducible. A concept can be reduced into its components, its parts, constitutions, not in the physical level, because physically, in the reality, concepts do not exist. Concepts are synthetic products of our mind, not in the outside world. They are synthetic products of our mind. Looking into the way or the manner realities exist. So, in the outside world or in the reality, actuality, there is only realities according to the Theravada Buddhism. But the mind takes them, when the mind becomes sensitive with these realities, it synthesizes a concept, something which is one. So, in our intellectual quest of finding out what is the reality, what we have to do is we have to analyze the concept. So it is a mental process. So when the concept is being analyzed, what we end up is are the ultimate realities. We cannot go any further reducing them into their components. Like hardness, it's just a nature, which is not a thing, which cannot be divided any further. Same thing happens with the consciousness, the act of knowing an object, it cannot be divided any further. Someone may think, like, if we also mention the conditioned realities depend upon other realities. For instance, if A arises because of B arises because of A, A is the cause, B is the effect. Here, cause and effect should not be mixed up with the physical causal effect, which is discussed in Western philosophy. For example, a billiard ball shot at another billiard ball after hitting it. This one, the second first billiard ball, for example, a red one, hit at the blue one. What happens when the red one hits?
The blue one
moves accordingly to the angle it is being shot. So this movement is the one cause, this movement is the effect. This is the effect, this is the causal movement effect. So this So in this kind of a scenario, we call this is the movement, the cause of the movement, the cause is the hitting of the clashing of the two walls. Then the result, effect is this movement. So this is the normal causality, the very basic causality principle introduced in certain philosophies. But here we are not talking about such happenings. In Theravada Buddhism, we are not talking about happenings, we are talking about realities. Realities. It means if this is the I, A is the I, for instance, A is the I. Depending on the I taking the object, I consciousness arises. I consciousness arises.
I'm sorry, but they cannot see us there.
Oh, you cannot see. Oh, sorry. Later. How is it now?
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Is the I, is the object, because of these two, I consciousness arises. I consciousness is the act of seeing. The act of seeing. It is, according to the Theravada Buddhism, it is a reality. It is a reality. It's not just happening like a movement. So this reality, seeing itself is a reality. It's not a mere happening according to Theravada. So it happens, occurs in the eye. This reality arises in the eye. So this reality is the effect, for example, we take this as the effect. These are the causes. These are the causes. So if B is begot or produced, caused to happen by A in terms of realities. This is the cause, this is the effect. Someone may ask, why can't? Isn't it that the effect can be reduced into cause? Like we divide a table into its wooden parts and also into particles. So can't we reduce the effect into the cause? This is the one argument that exists. According to the Theravadians, effect is another new reality. Cause is a different reality. Cause and effect doesn't mean that effect is made out of cause. It's not that if the components of the effect are not the cause, the component or the constitutions of the effect are not the cause. Like a table is made out of wood. Table is made out of wood. But table is not an effect because there has not been a table any time. It's just a matter of how the wood is kept in the space. We get the idea of a table. So here, effect is something new. Cause is something different. So there are two realities. There are two realities. So in a causal relationship, effect cannot be reduced into cause because cause is a one reality, effect is a different reality. So when we say this mental analysis of finding out the ultimate reality, this reduction, like this analytical approach, we cannot say effect is made out of cause. We say effect is caused by the cause, like it happens to arise because of the cause. That is also one thing that we should keep in mind when studying the Theravada teachings. And then, we stopped. Another ultimate explanation about the reality is Paramatta Dhammas are mere natures or qualities. Mere natures or qualities, they are not things. They are not things. For example, if you take a subatomic particle, like an electron, this is a thing according to science. this cannot be divided any further so far, but this is something, a particle. According to the Theravadins, the smallest part that you cannot divide any further physically is called Rupa Kalapa. Rupa Kalapa is the physical thing that cannot be divided physically, not intellectually. Physically, this cannot be divided any further. Then, as this takes some space and it shows some physical attributes of a thing, according to Theravada, this is made out of something. If it takes some space and if it acts like a thing, it is made out of something. So they go on to find out the first ingredients of this reality, this particle. So they find out, they explain that this is made out of four natures. Like hardness, cohesion, heat or cold, coldness, and pushing nature. It's like opposing, these are opposing forces. Only when they are balanced, they can exist. They're all the others are balanced. So it's a very delicate existence. Like for instance, even in science, they would say, if the gravitational constant was changed in a very out of this degree, if there was a slight change in the gravitational constant, the entire world would collapse. But there are certain constants like which are very delicately balanced. So that's why some go in to explain that chance is not a way of explaining the existence, and they go into the design. Like the world has to be created by someone. So likewise, that there is one approach. There are three approaches about the existence of the world. One is by chance, one is by necessity, one is by design. So finally we'll find out where the Theravada Buddhism forms from. It's very close to the necessity, in one sense. Later we'll discuss all this matter. When we have studied the very basics of the Theravada doctrine, unless it will be just some daunting task, because we have to find out what are the principles, what are the fundamentals, of the tradition, so then we can see very forth. So there, it's a very delicate or very delicately balanced existence. If we go into this Rupa Kalapa to explain, we'll find that there should be a fine balance for them to exist. So these realities are natures. So when these natures come together, they manifest as things. So the same thing happens with the mind. But in the case of mind and mental factors, they don't manifest as things even though they come together. So the conclusion is, according to Theravadins, what really exists are just natures. They are not things. They don't consume any space. Hardness doesn't have a shape. It doesn't consume any space. Cohesion either. Heat or coldness or then the pushing nature. They do not consume any space or they do not have any shape. But when they come together, they manifest as things. Mm-hmm. Manifestation is a different thing. Their nature is different. So the fundamental is they are mere natures or qualities and they do not have any shape. Then another very basic fundamental is all the paramattha dhammas that we will be discussing very soon, briefly. All the paramattha dhammas that exist have their intrinsic nature, very basic intrinsic nature, and also their unique function. They have a unique function and also intrinsic nature. That is a must for every paramattha dhamma. They have their intrinsic nature, the nature which enables us to distinguish it one from others. So paramattha intrinsic nature. Study the Theravada teachings about the realities. You have to be aware of what is an intrinsic nature and what is a function. Even in biology, when we study, we know what are the nature of a cell and the functioning of their function. So likewise, when we talk about the realities, we know about the nature and what they, how they function. For example, if hardness, we talk about the hardness. According to the doctrine, hardness is just the nature. Hardness, patavi, for the name given for that is patavi. Patavi has the nature of hardness. It is the nature of hardness. Intrinsic nature is hardness. And its unique function, it acts as a surface. So based on this hardness, the other three elements can exist. So likewise, each and every reality has its nature and also has its function. Function means what it performs. That means like how it supports others, what kind of effect it has upon others. So these are functions. So likewise, all the realities possess an intrinsic nature and also have a unique functioning. Based on them, we categorize how many intrinsic natures or how many realities exist according to the Theravada doctrine. So the realities, like now we are talking about, if I remind again, we have Paramattha. We have Paramattha, and this Paramattha was divided into Sankata, Asankata, conditioned, unconditioned. I'll write the Pali word, sorry. Sankata, Asankata, conditioned, unconditioned. Then we categorize them as Paramattha Dhammas, then we name Upadana Dhamma, then we discuss about Paramattha Jhanika. Then in the Asankata Paramattha we have five types of Nibbana. Right. So now here we are here. Just want to remind where we are. In our discussion, we are just talking about the Paramattha Dhamma. So these are just stages of the Paramattha Dhamma. This is a completely different reality. State before. So in these Paramattha Dhammas, they have the intrinsic features, they have the unique functioning. So these Paramattha Dhammas are basically two groups. We call them Nama and Rupa. Nama and Rupa. Nama is mentalities. Rupa is material. Rupa is material. We also mentioned all these, whatever it is, a non-mentality or materiality, they are just natures, they are just characteristics. They are not things. And they have the intrinsic nature and they have the unique function. So how many of those types of namas and rupas exist? Nama is again twofold as chitta.
Sana api arake game ude api UPSC. Es la mirada de Mr. Harry.
Okay.
Hello, Dr. Ryan.
Can you hear me? Then these realities, which are mentalities and materiality, they have their intrinsic natures, intrinsic like unique functions. Also, they have secondary characteristics and also secondary functions. Secondary characteristics and secondary functions. What does it mean? It's very common in Buddhist teachings, right? Some suttas also explain such secondary qualities of realities. For instance, you take Parvata. If you take the citta, the main function of citta is to cognize an object. This is the basic function of every citta. And some cittas have a function, like this is the basic of all cittas. Then some cittas have the function of bringing good results in future. Every citta cognizes an object, and some have the function of bringing good results in future. So we call them kusala cittas. We call them kusala. So the function of citta is to cognize an object. The nature of kusala is to bring a good result in the future. The same citta gets certain such functions. Some cittas have the, for example, we call it akusala cittas. They have the bringing bad results, ill results in the future. So likewise, they possess certain secondary functions. Secondary characteristics. And also they have secondary functions. The basic function and secondary function. So the commentaries have mentioned these are the basic functions of a reality. Secondary functions we have to find out searching the doctrine. Most of them are not mentioned so, but we can understand it. Like for instance, the moha. Basic function of moha is to cover the mind. Cover the mind from cognizing the object in its true nature or in a correct way. To cover the mind from cognizing an object correctly. That's his function. When moha is present, the mind is unable to take the object properly. So what happens? Certain negative emotions arises with the mind. Because it's not dealing properly with the object. So why it happens? The mind is not allowed to take the object clearly. Clearly means in its actual nature because of moha. And it has secondary function. Like moha has secondary functions. In terms of, it also binds, like bounds beings, like being who possesses it, to the samsara. So we call, in that regard, we call it a sanyojana. We call moha sanyojana. It also has the nature of defiling the mind. In that regard, we call it a kilesa. The same moha have these functions. It has a nature of following the mind stream, looking for an opportunity to arise as a state, mental factor. So likewise, these realities, they do possess their intrinsic natures, unique functions. At the same time, they possess secondary natures and also secondary functions.
That's also something we need to keep in mind. Then we go to the next point, The next fundamental, which is very vital, we talk about intrinsic nature of a reality. Intrinsic nature of a reality. This statement may bring the idea that the reality possesses the intrinsic nature. Because we are using the term has, the reality has its own intrinsic nature. So when I say I have a car, I myself and the car are different things. I myself and the car are different things. So when I say I have hands, I consider myself as one thing and hand as another thing. So the possessor and the possessed, the possessor and the possessed are normally two things, grammatically. So when we say the reality has an intrinsic nature, this statement could convey the idea that the reality is one thing, the nature is one thing. Right? A reality has or possesses intrinsic characteristic . So this may give the idea that reality is one thing and it possesses or it has a characteristics. So it's like a duality. When we go grammatically, we say Patavi has hardness as its characteristic. So it shows that Patavi is the reality, hardness is the characteristics. But according to the Theravadians, this statement is a way of conveying an idea. It's just for the convenience of expression. But in reality, according to the Theravadians, in the actuality, reality and the intrinsic nature are same. Though it is said that the Patavi has hardness as its characteristic, in the actual sense, the meaning is Patavi. I think there is a microphone on which disturbs. Could you please mute? I don't know whose mic is that. Can the host mute this mic? Could the host mute this microphone, please? Okay. Thank you. So according to the explanation, doctrine, now Patavi has hardness. Patavi has hardness as its characteristic, just a saying. But according to the doctrine, what explains is Patavi itself is the hardness. Hardness itself is the patavi. That's a very vital fundamental. We also mentioned these are just natures. They don't have any shape or they are not things. So likewise, the reality itself is the characteristic. Is the characteristic. The reality is itself is the characteristic. So according to this formula, though we say patavi has hardness as its characteristic for our easy conveying of the message, it should be wrote as patavi itself is hardness. This is the actual saying. The before it was the grammatical saying. Like grammatical means it's just a way of expression. Patavi itself is the hardness. Hardness itself is patavi. There is no duality. There is no duality. So if this is one, this has to be one, not two. There's a very important fundamental that shows that in the end, consciousness is the act of knowing an object. Craving is the act of attaching or liking or getting attached to a certain object. It's not that a person is attaching to something. It's not that the person is cognizing an object. The vijnana citta, consciousness itself is the cognition, is the act of cognition. So likewise, all the realities, when we explain a reality in terms of its intrinsic nature, please keep in mind that the nature, the intrinsic nature or the intrinsic characteristic itself is the reality. There is no duality in this Theravada doctrine according to the in terms of reality and its characteristic. There is a duality. Mind and matter is a duality. We say the person or the human or the being is a constitution of two parts, the mind and matter. Mind is not the matter, matter is not the mind. In that sense, there is a duality in the Theravada tradition. But when we come into the reality and its characteristic, reality and its characteristics, there is no duality. The reality itself is the characteristic. Yeah, these are the very basic fundamentals that I would like to discuss about the Sankata Paramattas. So for the last fundamental, this is not a fundamental actually. So how do we know that, how do we verify the existence of these realities within the Theravada doctrine? So sometimes there is an idea that these explaining the realities in terms of ultimate natures, as ultimate natures or intrinsic characteristics, is a later development during the evolvement of the Theravada tradition. But according to the doctrine we have, the sutras and so forth, there are very clear evidences to show that the Buddha has advocated the existence of realities. That is one sutta which Buddha says, there is an understanding among the wise that some things do exist and some things do not exist. Some things do exist and some things do not exist. So there is an understanding among the wise people, humans. So he mentions that as another wise person, I do not deny this idea. What does it mean? It means like he said, wise people consider that there is impermanent matter. There is an impermanent matter. So I also do advocate that there is an impermanent matter. The wise one would say that there is no such a permanent matter in the observable world. There is no such a permanent matter. So I also do say that there is no permanent matter. So what does this mean? Now he is talking about matter. In terms of matter, the two characteristics of the two types of matter is one is permanent and one is impermanent. So normally the wise would say there is no observable matter, there is no observable permanent matter. The Buddha would say observable or unobservable, wherever it is, there is no permanent matter. He denies the idea that there is a permanent matter. But he accepts the idea there is a permanent matter. So the statement he gives is, it does exist. So these kind of statements, he says like, I was searching for the reference directly, because it would be useful for the listeners to understand where it is. If you give me a few minutes, I can give you the reference. The sutta is called Puppa Sutta. The Puppa Sutta he mentions. He says, this is the statement. Rupang Bhikkhave. Rupang Bhikkhave Panditana. Rupang Bhikkhave Anichang. Dukhang. Viparinama. Dhammang. Atti Sammatang. Loke. Panditanang. Aham pitang atthiti vadami. What does this Pali statement say? Rupam bhikkave anichang dukkang viparinama dhammang atti sammatang. The matter, monks, the matter is impermanent and brings suffering. It is subject to change. It is subject to change. And considered by the world as existing. By the wise. It is considered by the wise as something exists in the world. Loke Panditana. In the world, it is considered as something exists. Aham pitang, me or I also. Attiti vadami. Says that it exists. It does exist. So what these statements say, that Buddha advocated that the rupa exists. In the sutta it goes like Vedana and all the other aggregates do exist in the world. So existence has been clearly advocated. It's not something that is according to the teachings. It's not something that arises in the mind. It's not something synthesized in the mind. It's not a virtual reality which can only be seen in our experience, not a subjective reality. According to Buddhism, reality is objective. It exists despite of the observer. For example, if you take another simile, there was a sutta called Achela Kassapa Sutta. Achela Kassapa Sutta. In this sutta, the Buddha asked, One ascetic came and asked from the Buddha, if the suffering is made by someone else, Buddha said, no. If the suffering, I don't say so. If the suffering is made by your own self, because he's asking the question based on self, Buddha said, no, I don't say so. If the suffering is made by one's own self and also by others, Buddha said, I don't say so. Then he asked the question, is the suffering is neither made by yourself nor made by someone else? Buddha said, I do not say so. It's like, it was like, neither no, like, it's one kind of, because it's still based on some self-idea. That's why he rejected it. Then he asked Buddha, don't you know about the suffering? And Buddha said, I do know about the suffering. And he does it exist? He said, yes. Atti kassapa dukkham. There is a suffering. Atti, there is a suffering. And then in many other suttas, he explained, what is the suffering? What is the suffering? In the Dhamma Chakra, the very first sermon, he said, Panchupadana. Panchupadana. Khanda dukkha. The five aggregates are the suffering. They are the suffering. Grammatically, if you go tell it in Pali, this is called, this grammatically we call, they are in the same apposition. That's a grammatical term, apposition. They represent the same thing. That's why their case endings are the same. Dukkha, khanda. It was rupang, dukkhang. Be right. It's in the same apposition. Apposition means they represent the same thing. So what is suffering here? Suffering means realities that bring suffering. What are they? They are the five aggregates. So when the Buddha says in the Acheleka Kassapa Sutta, Buddha mentions dukkha, atti dukkha, atti kassapa dukkha. Dukkha means dukkha, atti dukkha. Dukkha atti means suffering exists. Then he says the five aggregates are the suffering. So it's very simple logic then. The suffering exists and the five aggregates are the suffering. So what is the conclusion that we can come? We can conclude that the five aggregates, these are the five aggregates. So the five, if the suffering exists and the five aggregates are the suffering, the final conclusion is the five aggregates do exist. Means the five aggregates exist. Right? This is the very basic logic. If every human is mortal, if Aristotle is a human, we can conclude Aristotle is mortal. So likewise, according to the Acheleka Kassapa Sutta, Buddha mentioned there is suffering. Clearly stated, you can find the Sutta reference. Then in the Dhammacakka Sutta, he mentioned the five aggregates are the suffering. So what is the conclusion when you merge these two very basic fundamentals of the sutras? Five aggregates do exist. So this statement doesn't say that five aggregates brings you. This statement, when you say panchupadana khanda dukkha, it doesn't say that the five aggregates brings you suffering. This says grammatically, if you say this, what does it mean by apposition? Because I think you have seen when the Buddha mentions about rupa, he mentions rupang dukkhang. Vedana dukkha, not dukkhang, not Vedana dukkhang. Why this change? The ones who have studied Pali would know this. Why this change of case ending? Because this acts as an adjective and they are in the apposition. We call it a predicate. So it's a predicate with a nominative case ending noun. The predicate is according to its case ending. And we call they are in apposition. Apposition means the two words represent the same thing. Two words represent the same thing, but different aspects. Different aspects. Vedana has the characteristic, the word Vedana refers to the same thing, and the word Dukkha refers to the same thing. But they are representing two different aspects. Vedana The word Vedana says this reality has the nature of tasting the flavor of an object. This reality has the nature of tasting the flavor of an object. At the same time, this reality has the nature of bringing suffering. Dukkha means the reality that brings suffering. So dukkha has two meanings. The word dukkha has two meanings. It can refer to suffering itself. It's also a reality, if we go further. And then a reality which causes suffering. Which causes suffering. Someone can have a question on this. A reality which causes suffering should be the cause of suffering, like the Samudaya Satcha. There are two types of causes here. Samudaya Satcha means the reality which causes the suffering to happen after death. Doesn't let the suffering to terminate, get terminated at the end of the death. But these causes are, if you have the body, you will experience immense of suffering maintaining this. The mind, the mental factors are the same. So here the word dukkha refers to the realities which cause the suffering. What are these realities? In this sentence, that reality which caused the suffering is the Vedana. In here, the reality which caused the suffering is the Rupa. So that's why they represent the same thing. That's why in Pali they are written in the same case ending. Why it is not Rupang Dukkha or Vedana Dukkhang? Grammatically, the idea is they represent the same thing. They are in the opposition. So what does it mean? Dukkha itself is Vedana, Rupa itself is Dukkha. So that's why we come to the conclusion with the basic logic. The Achelaka Kassapa Sutta, Buddha mentions, Atti Dukkhan, there is suffering. In the Dhammacakka Sutta, he clearly says, the five aggregates are the suffering. So what is the deduction that we can come? We can deduct. It means the five aggregates do exist. Right? So there are ample of suttas to verify that the Buddha himself has advocated existence of the realities. But we should know that their existence is very, very brief, like very short-timed. They arise and pass away immediately. But during that momentary existence, according to the Theravadians, they do exist. It's not that they do not exist. They can be found in the reality. So these are the things that I would like to discuss today in this lecture. So far, we have concluded all the basic characteristics of Paramattha Dhammas. To give a very brief summary, Paramattha Dhammas are the realities which have intrinsic natures, and they do arise together with some other intrinsic natures, and they have their own arising. These Paramattha Dhammas are empirically observable in the reality, in the five sense doors, and also with the mind door, through the mind door. And also in the intellectual analysis, they are the irreducible elements of the existence. They cannot be reduced any further in our mental analysis. And they are just natures, they are not things. And also they have their own unique basic intrinsic nature and unique function. And in terms of numbers, they are divided into two groups, Nama and Rupa. Nama is further divided again into Chitta and Chetasikas, consciousness and mental factors. Consciousness is one reality, mental factors are 52 according to Theravadians. And the Rupa material is 18. Then these realities also possess sub-characteristics, secondary characteristics, and also secondary functions. Then the final conclusion we came was a very important point. The characteristic itself is the reality. Reality itself is the characteristic. And then each these Paramattha Dhammas, their existence can be verified with various suttas. So the next week I'll be discussing about some conditioned nature of the conditioned realities. And then I'll start to explain what are these realities in brief. Like what is a chitta, what are the chetasikas, what is a rupa. Those lectures, I would take few lectures to briefly explain them and then go into the other types of realities like Anuppanna Dhammas, Paramattha Jatikas, and Uppadino Dhammas. So during this course of 20 lectures, I will be concluding the one chapter called Ultimacy, which is a very, very delicate chapter. I'll be taking all the 20 lectures to conclude all the aspects of ultimacy. Not to go into detail about each and every rupa, but because it takes lots of time. For this first season, like first session, first 20 lectures, I'll be taking till May, end of May. I'll be discussing about the ultimacy only, but in an overall picture. So that will be the lecture, and I open the forum for discussion. If anyone has any questions, they can ask. And before I go into the question, I remember about a question raised a few weeks ago, which also I answered in the last lecture. Here we know that realities do have their intrinsic nature. Realities have their intrinsic nature, and the reality itself is the intrinsic nature. And there was a question asked, can lobha change into dosa, or dosa change into moha, or are they interchangeable? There was a question, such question asked. I think now we get a clear answer. A reality has its own intrinsic nature. So the attachment craving itself is the lobha. The hatred itself is the dosa. The delusion itself is the moha. So they are not interchangeable. Lobha can never fall into dosa. Dosa is a different reality. Moha is a different reality. Dosa is a different reality. They do exist together. Lobha can never arise alone. It has to be assisted by moha. Unless we have delusion, we are not attached to something. Dosa cannot alone arise alone. It has to be assisted by moha. It needs the support of moha. Moha can arise without lobha and dosa. There is a possibility. But it has to get the support of other mental factors. So the question was asked, can their nature, intrinsic nature, be interchanged? No. According to the Theravadians, cannot. It's not a transformation. Now, lobha can cause dosa. That is a different thing. Lobha can never change into dosa. Lobha can cause the arising of dosa. When we are attached to something, we get fear, we get sometimes if things don't go as we like, we get angry, we get frustrated. So the lobha is the cause for this dosa to happen. So because we had the lobha, and because of that, the dosa can happen. Right? That's what the Buddha says. Because of lobha, we get the dosa. It's not the transformation of lobha into dosa. No. It's cause. Lobha causes the dosa to arise. Lobha is a different reality and dosa is a different reality. I think that question was raised once. I think it would be more clear with this fundamental. Yeah. So if anyone has any questions, please raise your voice.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. So as I said in the chat box, if anyone has any questions, please either put in the chat box or raise your hand and we will unmute you.
Chat box again, the other questions? Chat box again.
So in the meantime, for this, I have a question, Bhante.
Yes. Okay.
I don't see any questions here. So I have a question. This is like a question from the previous lecture.
Okay.
So in the previous lecture, you gave us the four categories of the pramatta, sankata, dhamma. So we talked about the pramatta jatika. So another question I have for the pramatta jatika is that we know that it is anusaya, it's kind of anusaya. So it's a different, it's a stage of the pramatta dhamma. So the question is, can the jiva take the pramatta jatika as an object?
Yeah. So it's also a very important question. Now, paramatta jatikas are the latent tendencies or the latent forces that we talk. Can the chitta take them as an object? So there are, according to the Theravadians, the Buddha possesses certain unique attributes, knowledges. We call them asadharana jnana. We name them as asadharana jnana. Asadharana means unique, not common to the savakas. Not common to the savakas. So in these asadharana jnanas, there are two specific wisdoms by which he can understand. Indriya paro pariyatte jnana means by which he can judge the sharpness of the faculties of others, how they are supported by their previous existence, and also how much they have developed. And the asaya anusaya, the latent forces. According to the Theravadians, it is not possible that the Savaka could cognize these latent forces directly. That is the basic fundamental. But about the Buddha, there is nothing mentioned. It says he can understand. I am unable to say how is it possible, what is that, what is, why it is only unique to him. Maybe it's because of his very vast, broad wisdom. So then a question may arise, like we know there are reflective knowledges. When we attain the Magga and Phala, a yogi would reflect about five things. He may reflect about his attainment path, fruition, the Phala, Nirvana, what he saw or what he attained, then the remaining defilements and the eradicated defilements. Eradicated defilements and remaining defilements. If an arahant is able to know this, what does it mean? Does it mean that he is able to observe his latent defilements? So to this, the commentaries say that these last two reflective knowledges are not direct experiences. So they are based on the scriptural knowledge only. They are based on the scriptural knowledge. Maybe they have such a feeling that his mind is far away from loba, dosa, and there is no possibility that he may get a dosa, because such a clarity is there. Such a clarity is there. But they are unable to observe these latent defilements directly. And in the asadharana jnanas, the unique wisdoms which are not common to the savakas, Buddha can also know about the charita. Charita here, normally the word charita refer to the temperament, our nature. But here the word charita means what has been practiced. Past wholesome and unwholesome deeds. Wholesome and unwholesome deeds done in the past. A savaka is able to know what is the deed which caused him this birth. What are the akusalas that he has done in the past. So likewise, they are able to see that looking into the past. But it seems, this is my personal idea, it seems that what the Buddha's unique wisdom is, he is able to observe the kamma samangita or the kamma force, and to know what sort of possibilities are there. Like when we come into a certain life, there are possibilities, possible kammas, forces that can give results. Not all the kamma can give results in the same life. It seems like when we study the doctrine, it seems there is a certain range which is possible to be given, give results in a certain existence. So Buddha is able to know such forces, like the latent kamma force and so forth. So the conclusion that we, and then there is another in the Aniruddha Samyutta. You can see in the Aniruddha Samyutta, Aniruddha Samyutta, Venerable Aniruddha, a very special arahant in our sasana, says that he possesses all the 10 powers. All the 10 powers that the Buddha possessed. He claims that. Why does he possess them? Because he has practiced the 4 satipatthana. So according to that, one of the asadharana jnanas, one of the unique wisdoms are mentioned in the indriya paro pariyatte jnana. According to that wisdom, he is able to see the faculties and the support given to the faculties from the past, like the Upanishya force, and also the latent defilements. So the commentary states, then this was asked as a question. This became a debate in the third council. You can see this in the Kathavattu of Balakatha. Balakatha. It's in the second or third group, Vagga. In this Balakatha, one tradition suggested that even Venerable Aniruddha has those asadharana jnanas because of his claim. So it means he is able to observe the anusaya, he is able to observe the Upanishad support to the faculties and so forth. There was an argument on this. Then the Katavathu rejects this idea with counter arguments, not with direct explanation. So it was like a debate. Like, if you say so, then this is also possible. This is also possible. Like they try to break the foundation of their argument. They want to show that their foundation of argument is not very, very strong. The commentary gives the information and says, what Venerable Anuruddha says that he possesses one of these attributes is that it's in a shallow level. He's not able to see the Upanishad support given to the faculties. He's able to see the how someone's faculties are, whether they are developed, how much they are developed and so forth by observing them. It's like a casually we can guess by associating someone. So because of his concentration is very sharp, very focused, he's able to judge others' faculties, not like direct observation like the Buddha does. And also regarding the Anusaya, he's able to see the defiled natures of a certain person. This person is prone to lobha, prone to dosa and so forth, but not to observe the latent forces. So according to that, so it's very solidly mentioned in the Theravada tradition that the Savakas are unable to see these latent forces, but the Buddha can. But there was a tradition which believed that even the Savakas could do that based on the explanation given in the Anuruddha Samyutta. We interpret it in a different way and they interpreted it in a different way. That's what I answer that I need to give for this question.
Thank you, Padre. I had that question because someone may reason this way. So we know that according to Amitabha, Chitta can take only one object.
Right.
And we know that at the Magga moment, the Magga Chitta takes Nibbana as the object. But according to the Supanta method, it says that at the Magga moment, the Magga Chitta does actually four functions. And one of which is to eradicate Tanha. And Tanha is basically Anusaya. So how are we going to explain that? Does that mean that it takes Tanha and it's not taken as well?
Yeah, it's another very important question. So we need to clarify this point. So Maggacitta, as you said, does four functions. Like it understands the suffering. It eradicates the cause of suffering. It attains the nirvana and also observes the nirvana. And it develops the path. The four functions of Magga: knowing the suffering, eradicating cause like Tanha, then attaining Nirvana, or observing also, there are two functions, observing Nirvana, then developing Magga path. There are four wisdoms mentioned in the Buddhist teaching, in the Magga. Like wisdom in suffering, wisdom in Tanha, cause of suffering, wisdom in Nibbana, and wisdom in path. Four functions, four types of wisdoms. They are all mentioned with regard to the path consciousness, Lokuttara Magga. And as Dr. Ryan said, we also know that when the practice is done, if we attain the path at a certain moment, if this is the path consciousness, and these are followed by fruition. So this path consciousness, Magga, has a specific unique object. It always takes Nibbana as the object, not others. Magga is unable to eradicate the suffering if Magga takes Sankhara as an object. It has to take Nibbana as an object. That is how it gains the power to eradicate. So then how do we explain? Because Magga has an object of Nibbana. It recognizes Nibbana. So, does it, because we also mentioned it has the wisdom of tanha, wisdom of nibbana, wisdom of magga, wisdom of suffering. There is no observation of suffering here. It's only pure nibbana has been observed. And what are these functionings? It eradicates tanha, this, and also it says it knows the suffering. Suffering, it doesn't know suffering here. It knows only nibbana. So, logically, we can say wisdom of nibbana is acceptable here. Attaining nibbana is acceptable here. Yeah, eradication, maybe it's possible, it get eradicated. But wisdom of tanha, eradication, what has been eradicated, tanha. How could have an understanding about this? How does it know about itself? The magga cannot know about itself, magga. Right? So these, if you find out, we find there are some controversial points here. So this, for this, we have to understand there are two types of understanding, two types of wisdom, two types of understanding in the Theravada tradition. Two types of understanding. One is understanding while cognizing what is understood. Cognizing what is understood. Like we want to know about a computer, we know it, we think about it, we observe it, and we get the knowledge about it. We want to study something, we have to send our focus towards that. When you observe sankharas, we get the wisdom of impermanence while we observe a sankhara, see it rising and falling. So it is also a wisdom. Wisdom gained by cognizing what is understood. So mind has to cognize it. So this is one type of wisdom. The second type of understanding, according to the Theravadians, is by removing the obstacles for the wisdom. Removing the obstacles for the wisdom is also understanding. And this is the most important, most very highest understanding according to the tradition. So now we can see when the path consciousness arises, the ignorant moha, the latent moha is eradicated. So when the moha is eradicated, the obstacle to know the suffering clearly, obstacle to understand the nature of tanha, obstacle to understand the nature of nibbana, magga is removed. Why we don't attain the Four Noble Truths? Why we don't understand the Four Noble Truths? Because our mind stream is obstructed by this latent moha. So when the moha is removed, even though the magga takes nibbana as the object, in this sense, if we talk about magga takes nibbana as the object, it is in the first aspect of wisdom, cognizing what is understood. Magga cognizes nibbana at that time. In terms of the first aspect, magga has understanding about nibbana only. But with regard to the second aspect, when the moha is removed, obstacles to no suffering, even though it doesn't observe suffering here, because of he has developed the wisdom up to here with the practice, surely the previous practice does help these functionings. Without that practice, these functions can never happen. So as a result, when the moha is removed, we say his understanding of suffering is completed. Here, we may know about the rupa at one time, vedana at one time, sanya at one time, but we cannot understand the entire suffering with the one cognition. But with the madga, we say the understanding of suffering is completed at a one mind moment. That is by removing the obstacles to the wisdom. So in Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, we have two types of wisdoms. That is wisdom gained while cognizing an object which is understood and by removing the obstacles to the wisdom. So in this sense, tanha, magga citta has the understanding of tanha by removing this obstacle, and while we happening, it also eradicates the tanha.
Okay, thank you, Bhakti. Thank you very much.
Okay, sadhu.
Is there anyone have any questions? Anyone have any questions? So, I still don't see any questions. So, I have another question.
Okay,
Doctor. So, from last lecture,
yeah.
So last lecture also we talked about Sankata Dhamma. So you get the five kinds of Sankata Dhamma. And the first two kinds are Samuti Nibbana and Tadangra Nibbana. So those are the, we can call it the daily life Nibbana. So but then in the Brahmacara Sutta, we know that there is one kind of wrong view which is called the Ditta Dhamma, which means the wrong view that considers Nibbana in the present. So could you please elaborate on the difference between these two concepts?
Yeah, thank you for it. It's a very important thing to understand. We will discuss this in detail when we come to the in this ultimacy lecture. I'll be briefly explaining about the nirvanas. There we'll discuss on this matter with much detail. Now, as a short answer, we have five types of Ditta Dhamma Nibbana. In Brahmajala Sutta. Right, for the audience, you can see this in Brahma Jala Sutta. There are 62 types of wrong views. Ditta Dhamma Nibbana Vada, right? If I remember, Ditta Dhamma Nibbana Vada. These are considered as false understandings. So one is gratifying the senses. Gratifying the senses. You just gratify your five sense doors, and this is considered as a nirvana. Then the remaining 2, 3, 4, and 5 are the jhanas. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana. Right? So these are considered as nirvana by some ascetics. These are considered by ascetics. These are mostly considered by householders who have such wrong ideas. Like Magandhya, not the Brahmin lady who accused the Buddha. You can see this in Majjhima Nikaya Sutta, Magandhya Sutta. Magandhya Sutta. He says that gratifying the senses is the utmost liberation. Some ascetics say the first jhana, second, third, fourth jhana, or immaterial jhanas also fall into this fourth jhana. They are the ultimate bliss. Buddha rejected them as Ditta Dhamma Nibbana Vada. As Dr. Ryan asked the question, now in the previous lecture, we mentioned about five types of nirvana. Sammuti Nirvana, Tadanga Nibbana, Vikkambana Nibbana, Samucheda Nisarana. Last two are the real nirvana. Real nirvana means, real means the nirvana we aspire for. Then the first two are daily life, Sammuti and Tadanga, we experience in our daily life. Vikkambana is also attained by certain ascetics, like the practitioners. So what is the difference? For instance, if you take the Vikkambana Nibbana, we mentioned about Vikkambana Nibbana, that is attained by jhanas. Vikkambana Nibbana and the rejected one in the Brahmajala Sutta, are they not the same? It's a very important question to be clarified. It has to be clarified. Because if I say Vikkambana, we know Vikkambana suppression happens with jhana. You cannot attain this Vikkambana Nibbana without jhana. So what is the difference? In Brahmajala Sutta, Buddha has directly mentioned these are wrong nirvanas. And we mentioned this is another Nibbana and Asankata Nirvana. And if we don't say it's not a nirvana, it's a nirvana, only thing is you come into it and come out of it. The difference is, this says about the consciousness, chitta and cetasikas, which arise as jhanas. This nirvana means, because of the jhana, chitta and cetasikas, defilements are suppressed. So when the defilements are suppressed, the mind process comes into a very calm, peaceful state. We are not talking about the jhana chitta. After the suppression is done, as long as one doesn't lose this jhana, for that, be for your further reference, please refer to Patilabha Katha in Kathavattu. Patilabhakata means, what does it mean to have a jhana? What does it mean to possess a jhana? Possessing jhana doesn't mean that while you are you don't possess a jhana only while you are in the jhana. You possess the jhana as long as you don't drop down from it. Drop down means as long as the defilements doesn't come into the surface. We suppress the kilesas with a jhana while we are in other activities also, those kilesas are not obstructing us. So that is called the suppression. So as long as the kilesas don't come up, we possess the jhana even while we are doing something else. Because we have the ability to go back to the jhana without starting from the beginning. If it was a kasina jhana, you can enter into the kasina jhana directly with a little bit of effort. It has to have an effort, but you don't need to go in to see the kasina disc from the beginning. That's the difference. A one who doesn't possess the jhana has to go. A person who possess the jhana doesn't need to go into the observe the disc. He can do it very easily. But if you lose the jhana, you have to start from the beginning. But it will be easier than a newcomer, new practitioner, because you have the experience. One has the experience. So therefore, possessing jhana means after, till the defilements come up. If this was the mind process, and this was the jhana chitta, by which the defilements were suppressed, then even after he's from out of jhana, as long as the defilements come up, for example, if defilements came out, then what happens? From here, he loses the jhana. From here, he possesses the jhana. Till here, he possesses the jhana. So what happens? Because of this suppression, his mind comes into a very calm state. Calm state means his mind is far away from defilements. These defilements are not occupying the mind. Before these defilements, even while they arise, and even before they were not arising, the mind was affected by these defilements. So that's why we see when we meditate, our mind gets, even after meditation, our mind is still in a very calm state. That is because the effect of defilement is very low, very, very far away. So likewise, if you attain a jhana, this becomes a very fixed suppression. So there can be some differences while you are in the jhana and out of the jhana, but it's not like a person who has not possessed the jhana. So this state of being freed from these defilements is called the Vikkhamana Nibbana, not the jhana itself. So it's a very sharp point means then there will be a lot of follow-up questions about this. We shall discuss this when we come to the chapter of Asankata Nibbana, because to explain this, we have to accept the idea that such a state existed before. So mind comes into that state and it remains in that state as long as the defilements are not coming up. So when the defilements come up, it falls down from that state. So how do we explain that? How do we understand such a state it existed? When we explain the nirvana, the same method is used. We'll discuss this matter in detail. As an answer for the question, the difference is, according to Brahmajala Sutta, they were talking about the chitta chetasikas. According to this categorization, we are talking about the state attained, the calm, peaceful state attained by the suppression of the defilements, not the chitta chetasika itself.
Thank you so much for this. Yeah, I look forward to those lectures.
Okay.
The details. Thank you, Dr.
Okay, sir.
So I don't see any question in the chat box, and also no hands raised. So.
Okay.
I still have a few more questions, but then it's also time, so it's up to you.
Okay, so I think I also need to attend ceremony after the class. Okay. So shall we call, we'll take the questions to the next week?
Yes,
Thank you very much for joining, and we wish that with this merit may cause for the prolongation of our sasana. Buddha sasanang chiran tithatu, Buddha sasanang chiran tithatu, Buddha sasanang chiran tithatu, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you so much.